Hey everybody, it's Rick. Welcome back to the Nomad Pastor Podcast. You know, I spent a couple episodes talking about, Mormonism and if Mormons are Christians and, you know, how they justify being Christians when they really don't follow everything in the Bible, you know, when they say that the Bible's not 100% accurate or true. And so after doing that, I thought, man, we got to ask the same thing about progressive Christianity today. And so let's ask this question, right? What is progressive Christianity? And as I started doing this research, I found it's actually really hard to define what it is. You know, unlike Mormonism, where they're like, here's our rules, here's what we do. There's this umbrella term with a lot of different beliefs for progressive Christianity. And so I think it's hard to define. You know, personally, I hadn't heard a lot about progressive Christianity until I was listening to Cross-Examined, which I've mentioned before. I've mentioned Dr. Frank Turek, and he does a weekly podcast. And if you don't listen to it, you should go search whatever podcast platform you use and look up Cross-Examined and Dr. Frank Turek. You can go to his website, crossexaminedwithad.org. But on one of his shows, he had a guest who was, her name was Alyssa Childers. And Alyssa is an apologist and an author. And she wrote a book called Another Gospel, A Lifelong Christian Seeks Truth in Response to Progressive Christianity. And really, I thought that she summarized it better than I've been able to find anywhere else. And so I think she summed it up pretty clear. And what she said was there was really five kind of bullets, right? That progressive Christianity has a lowered view of the Bible or a lowered view of Christ, that their feelings are emphasized over facts, that the essential Christian doctrines are open for reinterpretation, that historic terms are redefined, and then lastly, that the heart of the gospel message, it shifts from sin and redemption to social justice. So, on the surface, we may not see the difference when we walk into a progressive Christian church, but the danger to it is to the people who aren't trained, right? And if you spend any amount of time, or for me, I spend a considerable amount of time with our Bible and studying everything I can about Christ and how we're supposed to live, then really progressive Christianity doesn't sound a lot like biblical Christianity. So if you've really done your work, and you've really studied, you start to question things. They talk about God, they talk about Jesus and love and compassion and the Bible. And that's scary, right? Because if people have never learned to think about theology on a deeper level or to think about what the Bible is teaching, they can mistake progressive Christianity for biblical Christianity. And that's why this movement is so dangerous for the youth of today. And I'm sure it probably goes without saying, but progressive Christianity, it often teaches an incomplete or false gospel, right? When I say it's a real danger to the youth, we hear about this threat today to our kids, right? To our kids' faith and the threat that atheists pose or the secular world poses, right? We see a difference in our kids when they go to school, especially in high school and college. You know, they're coming into their own and people are talking to them. But atheism, that's not the only threat. I'm going to challenge you that the bigger threat today, that I believe the bigger threat today, is progressive Christianity. It's one of those problems that you don't even see. It's one of those problems you don't recognize it until it's too late. You know, it used to be called liberal Christianity. But that name didn't include the masses because if you weren't liberal, why would you even consider looking into it, right? I mean, that's my opinion. But I've talked to people who feel the same way. I've talked to people who feel the same way as to why it's no longer called liberal Christianity, right? Progressive is a better word, right? We're progressive. So I think there's some things we got to understand, right? Progressive Christians do not like apologetics. They hate it, Well, and frankly, so do Mormons and anybody else who is trying to claim something other than the Bible. But we're going to be specific, right? Progressive Christians do not like apologetics. You know, there's a website called patheos.com, and within it, they have a blog. And in the blog, there's this thing called the unfundamentalist parenting, right? Excuse me. And they had an article in May of 2017 where they have this post that they featured called Why Your Children Do Not Need Apologetics. Now, I've talked about it before, but if you're not familiar with that term apologetics, it's the study of why there's a good reason to believe Christianity is true, right? It's how you prove the truth. And so this post is filled with misunderstandings. I'm not going to go into it all, but the purpose here is not to rebuke it, right? But I want to highlight why they don't like apologetics and why it's actually more important today than it ever has been. So the author of this post starts by telling people that she grew up, you know, with Lee Strobel and Josh McDowell. And if you don't know who they are, just go Google them, right? You'll find numerous books by both of them and details about how they've both analyzed and tested Christianity over and over again to find the truth. But after that, right after she says, hey, I grew up with these people, the author says that she encourages parents to leave apologetics material off the bookshelves and away from your home. And she gives several reasons, but one that she talks about that kind of struck me is it confines faith as doctrine, which I didn't quite understand. So I want to just read what she wrote. And here's what she says. She says, and I quote, "Our faith is a dynamic experience that shifts and evolves for us, and especially for a child growing leaps and bounds in their development. We cannot capture that experience and box it into a set of propositions to memorize and defend that limits and denies the realities of the human experience." Now, she goes on to say a lot more. You can go look it up, right? But this simple statement to me speaks volumes, right? She's really, I believe the author is really confused between the objective, right? Unchanging truth of God and the subjective, right? That changing experiences we have as we relate to God throughout our lives, right? So the truth that God has revealed to us, it doesn't evolve, it doesn't shift, right? That's the unchanging truth of God. But our experiences, they do, right? Our experiences are subjective. So just because our experiences shift and evolve, that has nothing to do with what is true or not true. So when you're teaching kids, or anyone for that matter, apologetics isn't about putting their experience in a box. In fact, it's the exact opposite. Right? Apologetics is about stepping outside your personal experience and examining what reason there is to believe, regardless of what your feelings are, right? When Lee Strobel, who wrote The Case for Christ, set out to prove it wrong, and you may have seen the movie, but there's a movie and there's a book and you can go check it out, but his goal was to prove Christianity wrong. Right. If you've read the book or seen the movie, his wife had converted to Christianity and she was born again, and he was having none of it. He wanted nothing to do with it. So he wanted to prove to his wife that it wasn't true. And the exact opposite happened. So regardless of how he felt, regardless of how subjective his experience was, he couldn't prove it false. So like I said, it's about proving something to be true, even if you disagree. You know, I've said this before that I'm a data guy, right? I've been in the technology field my entire career. And the reason is because it makes sense to me, right? Everything's binary. It's a one or a zero. And if you don't understand that, I'm sorry, you can go Google it. But that's everything is made from a one or a zero. So I want to know the truth. Even though it's not popular for me to say this, there is only one truth. There's not multiple truths. There's just one. I can either accept it or I can deny it. But it doesn't change whether it's true or not, right? I can say, well, you know, John Smith died. And you can say, no, he didn't. And I can say, no, he's in the box right there. We're at his funeral. He died. No, he didn't die. That's not true. So it doesn't matter how you feel, right? You can believe it's not true, but it's true. It happened. You know, if people are only developing their faith based on some shifting and evolving experiences, there's no way to know if your faith is placed in something true or not. There's nowhere to know or understand that what you're placing your faith in is solid. They don't know if the faith they have is in something that's going to change tomorrow. And if it's possible that it can change tomorrow, you no longer have faith. See, that's the problem with a shifting and evolving experiences getting used to develop faith. Look, you could have faith that your house is going to burn down, but that would not be a good place to put your faith in, right? Because it may or may not happen. It's not solid, right? You know, faith by itself is not a virtue. And it's only as solid as the object that you put your faith in. So the question then has to be, how can you be confident that Jesus, as the object of Christian faith, is solid? You know, for me, the answer is simple, and that's apologetics, right? That's why progression Christians don't like it, because it challenges them to think of biblical teachings in a category of objective truth. It challenges them to think of it in a way that's something that we're not free to change just because we happen to experience it in a different way. Right? In our life, 2 + 2 always equals 4. Whether I have trouble with that or not. I remember I was watching a newscast. I'm not going to say which one it is. But, you know, they were interviewing some college student, and they said, you know, well, 1 + 1 = 2. And they said, well, not always. What does that mean? It's either true or it's not. Experience cannot be elevated over the objective truth. Period. Right? And progressive Christianity is just one more reason our kids, and frankly, the church at large, desperately needs apologetics, if you ask me. And this study of apologetics, it's needed in for all of Christians. And I truly believe that, because whether you're engaging with the secular world or whether you're engaging with groups that teach some unbiblical version of Christianity, you have to be able to defend it. You know, and for some reason, the church body is we're mostly blind to this need. I mean, that's scary, isn't it? You know, another one of my favorite apologists is a cold case homicide detective, and his name is J. Warner Wallace, right? And he speaks, you know, every week, almost every week, at churches and conferences across the country. You know, he's friends with Dr. Frank Turek. And if you go to Dr. Turek's website, you can, you know, the crossexamine.org, you can go look up events. And you can look up Frank Turek's calendar, and you can look at J. Warner Wallace's calendar. And maybe that would be in an area that you're at, and I would recommend you go listen to him. But what he does is he attends these conferences because he wants to talk about the reliability of the gospel. He wants to make sure you understand the evidence for God's existence. You know, J. Warner Wallace, just like Dr. Frank Turek, has the opportunity to engage in a spectrum of believers, right? Whether he's at a church or a conference or a college or whatever they're doing. And they are able to do that in ways that nobody else could. He wrote this book called Forensic Faith. And if you haven't read it, you should. If you just listen to books on Audible, go get it. But in this book, what he says, and I quote, he says, in many of these churches, the people I meet aren't really interested in Christian apologetics. In fact, most are still completely unfamiliar with the word. Some even reject the value of such an effort. One more than on more than one occasion, I've heard a well-meaning believer say something like, well, that's nice, but I don't really need any evidence. I believe Christianity is true. So, in other words, I mean, Christians are largely unprepared to make the case for what they believe is true. And many in the church really deny the need for being prepared. Remember I did that podcast about faith, and you can't just have blind faith. You have to be able to defend it. That's what this is saying, right? I mean, today, the church is asleep. And while the church sleeps, while we sleep, while the church body sleeps, the secular world marches on. And they grow. They become increasingly hostile to the truth of Christianity. And they are like foreign invaders continuing to grow. That's why I say it's more than just blind faith. That we have to be ready. That's why one of my favorite verses in the Bible is 1 Peter 3:15. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. You know, for me, there's a lot of books that we can read. Now, of course, none are more important than the Bible. But at the top of the list, I think, is either I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist or Forensic Faith. I believe these two books, well, and I'll even add a third, which I think is Tactics by Greg Kochel, right? But I believe these books are well-written, they're powerful, they make the case for the importance of apologetics to every Christian, and they give it to you in a way that you can understand. These are a wake-up call to a sleeping church. And if you've never heard of apologetics, and they're a great place to start. You can get both, like I said, you can get all three of them on Audible or Amazon, right? For those who already understand the importance of apologetics, they are also a great resource because they help you learn how to share, not just with the fellow believers, but with everybody who needs help understanding. All right. I probably strayed a little off topic because we were talking about, you know, progressive Christianity, but I think I needed to, right? At the heart of progressive Christianity, there's a website, progressivechristianity.org, right? They list this 8 points of progressive Christianity. So I just wanted to say them, right? I want to read them because I think it's important that we understand what they're saying. And this is their words, right? You can go to progressivechristianity.org. I'm not modifying anything. So this is just 1 through 8, what they say. So number one, they believe that following the path and teachings of Jesus can lead to an awareness and experience of the sacred and oneness and the unity for all life. Number two, affirm that the teachings of Jesus provide but one of the many ways to experience the sacredness and oneness of life, and that we can draw from diverse sources of wisdom in our spiritual journey. Number three, seeking community that is inclusive of all people, including but not limited to conventional Christians and questioning skeptics, believers and agnostics, women and men, those of all sexual orientation and gender identities, and those of all classes and abilities. Number four, know that the way we behave towards one another is the fullest expression of what we believe. Number five, find grace in the search of understanding and believe there is no more value in questioning than in absolutes. Number six, to strive for peace and justice among all people. Number seven, strive to protect and restore the integrity of our earth. And number eight, commit to a path of lifelong learning, compassion, and selfless love. So I probably could break that down, but I know I don't have enough time, right? I mean, I think we're like, you know, 18 or 19 minutes in now, but, and there's a bunch of other stuff I want to go to, but here's the most important, not even the most important. Here's one of the things that I recognize in that. And that it says, number two, affirm that the teachings of Jesus provide but one of the many ways, right? One of the many ways. There is one way, right? The facts are simple. to say that, right, in item two, that means that progressive Christianity has a very low view of Christ. It's one of the hallmarks of their faith. Right? The Orthodox view of Jesus, of course, is that he is the divine Son of God and worthy of our worship and to be praised as God. But they believe that Jesus isn't so much the divine Son of God, but rather just this moral example for us to follow. He's like a big brother, right? That sets the pattern of, you know, the pattern that we walk in his footsteps, which is partly true, of course, that we do want to walk in his footsteps, that we do want to follow his example. But progressive Christians make that kind of the main thing, that, you know, just follow him, right? He's just a picture of what we can be and what we can do. And his main point is just to be an example for us. This lowering of Jesus is really the first mark that you see to recognize progressive Christianity, right? And they're focused more on moralism and not salvation. If you don't have any sort of sense of Jesus as someone to be worshiped, then he's just someone to be emulated. So the highest goal of Christian life for a progressive Christian is that you just have to be a good person. You should just follow certain rules. You should be kind to your neighbor. You're not really left with the gospel of salvation. You're left with this moral code. And it really reduces it to sort of a moralistic religion. You know, the last point that I probably need to make, and maybe it's not the last point, we'll figure it out as we go, is how progressive Christianity downplays how we have fallen, right? It really downplays our sin. It's this idea that people aren't really fallen, right? They're not really sinners. They're not really bad. There's not really anything marring us, that we're all good people at the core. And therefore, that they really do have an opportunity to be better. So you find that in progressive Christian circles, there's this downplaying of the word sin. They don't like to use the word sin. There's no interest in talking about the wrath of God or sin. You know, God is not portrayed as disturbed or upset by sin at all. That's kind of one of those classic hallmarks of progressive Christianity. You know, as I was preparing for this, I did a lot of research. And I found this article by this professor, right, Dr. Michael Kruger, and he serves as the president and Samuel C. Patterson Professor of the New Testament and Early Christianity at the Charlotte campus of Reformed Theology and Seminary. And I think he sums up what he believes about progressive Christianity as good as anybody. And this is what he said. So I'm going to quote Dr. Michael Kruger. It says, "Now, when you wrap all that up, you're left with something that's not really Christianity at all at the end. If you don't have a divine Jesus, and if you reduce it all to moralism and there's no real fall or sin, then the cross isn't really anything that saves you. When you look at the cross, it's just a good example of a good person. It's not really good news." That's what's really sad about progressive Christianity. At the end of the day, it's really not good news at all. It's really that it's all up to you. If it's up to us, that's bad news. But of course, the real gospel is good news, that it's all done and completed in the great and finished work of Christ. You see, if it's all about us, and it's all about moralism, and it's not about sin, and it's not about the divinity of Christ, and the saving, you know, how he saved us on the cross, right? He died for our sins. If none of that matters, it's not good news. But we are saved. He did those things for us. And through apologetics, you can prove it over and over and over and over and over again. So look, don't be blinded by the shiny objects. Don't be blinded by the love everyone, no sin, everything is okay message. It's not biblical, and it will pull you away from the truth. So I challenge you, as I end this podcast, do your work. Do your work. It's important, right? 1 Peter 3:15, I'll read it again. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks, to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. Do your work to be able to answer the questions, especially with our kids today, especially with the youth that are off to college, or they come home and they have a different view. All of their friends have talked differently. Don't be blinded by the love everyone message. Yes, we should love everyone, but that doesn't mean ignore sin. Yes, we should love everyone, but that doesn't mean ignore everything that Christ did for you. It's not biblical. I hope you enjoyed this message. I enjoyed preparing it. I learn a lot every time that I do. If you got questions for me, send me an email at hello@nomadpastor.org. If you like these, subscribe. Share them with your friends. Look, I appreciate it, and I hope you have a blessed week. Thanks.